In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Intercooler Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Intercooler Podcast with me, Dan Prosser, Andrew Frankel sitting opposite me. This is episode 206. We're talking about Formula One at war, or scandals in Formula One.
Yeah.
Just because it's endless, isn't it? Not only now, but throughout the whole history of F1.
I think throughout the whole history of it. I mean, I did briefly think about making this a sort of scandals in motor racing thing, but, you know, we'd need a pod week to do all
yes.
that.
Yes.
Yeah. There's so much stuff going on now, but it is, I think when you have situations where there's so much competition, and you have these organisations which somehow have to try and regulate,
yes,
and be sort of judge and jury and executioner over all the participants. There are always going to be people who are trying it on. There are always going to be egos involved.
That's one of the big
ones.
Big
egos involved.
Yeah.
People who are just not going to. People who would rather go down with all hands rather than just sort of back off a bit. You get what you get. And we're going to talk about a few of the occasions, well, the ones that are going on right now and those that have gone on in the not too distant past, actually.
And there are so many examples. As you say, there are lots of egos, but there are lots of vested interests and conflicting interests. I mean, the regulator, the FIA, might want one thing and the teams want another thing. The rights holder, whoever that is at the time, might want something else.
Yeah.
And there's so much money involved
and
so much power and influence at stake that there's just continual conflict between the different stakeholders. Should we talk about some of the recent ones?
Yeah.
Because it has been extraordinary, hasn't it?
Should we talk about the current one?
Yeah, yeah.
So Susie Wolf, everyone will know, is married to Toto Wolf.
Yep.
I think most people will know she used to be called Susie Stoddart.
Yeah.
Very effective racing driver in her own right. I've actually been on a grid with her.
Oh.
Years ago.
Did you beat her?
No. No, I think we were doing some Brit car or something, and I think she was in an MG or something. And I think I was in a Clio, and then she disappeared off into the distance. she's Toto's missus, but she's also, more importantly, and for the purposes of this, the managing director of what they call the F1 Academy.
Yeah,
which is the series for it's that kind of like the successor to
W Series. But it's within the F1 umbrella now.
Within the F1 umbrella, probably more likely to do what we all really hope, which is to promote female talent to the point that women can actually get to the top level of motorsport. And it was suggested, and actually I think this only came on the back of one unsubstantiated newspaper report, that she had improperly passed information, sensitive information, to her husband.
Mm.
The reaction was absolutely extraordinary, because not only did she and Toto stand up and go, no, because an investigation was launched. Every other team in Formula One stood up and said, No,
yeah.
We've not heard anything, seen anything. There is nothing to this. The investigation was then dropped as quickly as it had been started. And I think a lot of us kind of thought, well, that's the end of that. What Susie has done, though, has decided that this has had massive reputational damage to her. And she has launched a criminal complaint against the FIA in general and its president, Mohammed bin Sulayem.
Sulayem,
MBS. 14 times Middle Eastern rally champion.
Yes.
Which I didn't realise until I did research for this. And saying that it was, that this investigation was intimidatory and misogynistic, which is pretty powerful stuff. So, yeah, and we can't say too much about it, A, because we don't know that much about it, and B, because it's, you know, it's ongoing and current. But it is very interesting that she seems to have the support of pretty much the entire paddock. Lewis has come out with a very strongly worded statement saying that he has no confidence in, can we just call him MBS? Because I'll just get his name wrong otherwise. In him. MBS and Lewis have previous, don't they, because of the jewellery thing.
Yes.
Back in 2022, MBS, which I always thought was a bit unnecessary and, you know, given all the other safety concerns, but he just said that you couldn't have any jewellery on in the car. And Lewis, who obviously wears a bit, took exception to this. And I think that there is a slight sense of chickens coming home to roost on this. So that's what's happening, and you know, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens now, because I mean, Toto's certainly come out and said that they may have picked a fight with the wrong person, because you know his missus is no shrinking violet, and if she feels wronged, then she's not going to back down. She's not going to, you know, it's not like someone's going to sort of say, you know, oh, well, yeah, maybe we can do this, maybe we can do that, just make the problem go away. I think she feels wronged, and she wants to sort that out. I think the only problem that she's got, and I guess it's probably quite a nice problem to have, is that I think, you know, I think the thrust of her complaint is that she has suffered reputational damage as a result of these allegations. I think completely the reverse.
She comes out looking good, doesn't she?
I think far more of her now than I ever did.
Yeah.
I think her reputation has only been enhanced by this. You know, whether the FIA's lawyers point this out and whether that's a valid legal approach, I don't know. But I think much more of her for standing up and calling it out.
But there will be a casual audience, won't there, who hear that the FIA is investigating her and think that she's done something wrong. There will be lots of people who make that assumption.
I'd be very interested if anybody listening to this thinks that...
Not among our audience, but, you know, the very, very casual Formula One
on the sort of no smoke without fire basis. Yeah, I guess so. And it is interesting that from what I have read, and forgive me if this is incorrect, but, you know, all this seems to have stemmed from one unsubstantiated
report. Yeah, but this was the magazine Business F1. And Business F1 has been at the heart of a lot of controversies.
Yeah.
They have published a lot of dubious stuff in the past. And the curious thing about it is that the FIA should choose to publicly launch an inquiry without first doing some due diligence behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Why not talk to Susie Wolf and Toto Wolf, perhaps, and try and understand what's going on here? Why go so public about it?
Well, I mean, I think that one of the things that's going on here, and this leads on to actually another component of something that's going on today, is that MBS has come out and said that he thinks that all of this stuff, and I don't think he's necessarily talking specifically about Susie Wolf's complaint, but the manufacturers, you know, getting arsey with the FIA, is that it's a plot to undermine the leadership of the Federation.
Of course.
What is going on, though, and this is, and in many ways I find this a little, do I find it more disquieting? I'm not sure. But there was an investigation into him.
Yeah.
For alleged interference in two Grand Prix. It was the Las Vegas Grand Prix and the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix of last year. And you'll be glad to know he's been completely cleared.
Yes. Quite quickly as well.
By his own ethics committee.
Mm.
How can in what world? I think it was Zach Brown who said this is 2024, not 1984.
Really?
In what world do they get to mark their own homework? In what world do they get to be, you know, judge and jury over their own actions?
Mm.
It just seems bonkers to me.
MBS has been involved in quite a few quarrels in his relatively short time at the helm. It was last year or a couple of years ago. He commented on, there was someone publicly asserted that Formula One was worth $20 billion.
Mm.
And he came out and he didn't necessarily say that it wasn't, but he said, actually, this is a direct quote, as custodians of motorsport, the FIA, as a non-profit organisation, is cautious about alleged inflated price tags of $20 billion being put on F1. Now, if you're the rights holder, Liberty, you own the Formula One, essentially. Perhaps you want to sell it. Perhaps you want to sell it for $20 billion, having paid four or five, I think. And then the president of the FIA steps forward and says, we don't think it's worth that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good for business, is it? You're going to be fairly upset about him. And they will view it, Liberty Media will view it as meddling in commercial matters, which is not MBS's role.
No. No. Oh.
It goes on.
Yeah, but he's also, you know, he is not a man any more than, you know, Mrs. Wolf is a woman to back down.
No. No.
So it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be loggerheads, isn't it?
And we'll see more of this stuff.
Is there any part of you that's quite pleased that there's something interesting to talk about in Formula One at the moment, even if it's got nothing to do with anything that's going on? Or do you find the whole thing just quite grubby and unnecessary and you wish they'd all just shut up and go away?
Well, it's a bit like the Christian Horner stuff, isn't it? Which has gone a little bit quiet the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something meaty to get stuck into, and it's, you know, tittle-tattle and the gossip and everything else. But it's not good stuff, is it? You want to talk about racing.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't replace or anyway excuse the fact that, it, you know, out there on the racetrack, it's just not as interesting as we'd like it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many places we can go now. F1 at war. Scandals in F1.
Shall we go back a bit?
Yeah.
FISA FOCA. Now, when I first mentioned this to you, did the FISA FOCA war mean anything to you?
Yeah,
it did. Do you know what I was talking about?
Yeah, so only because I've read about it or seen. It's part of the Senna documentary, isn't it?
I think it. Well, okay, so Senna was only coming in right at the very end of it. I suspect it probably wasn't.
Oh, maybe I've seen something else.
I think you're talking about the, and it says an easy misunderstanding, the FIA. No, actually, no, because the FIA photo war was much later. So maybe it was something else.
Okay.
I think what you're talking about is Senna having a punch-up with Jean-Marie Balestre.
Yeah. He was the FISA president,
He was absolutely at the heart of the FISA FOCA war.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the FISA FOCA war, It's a bit difficult to get your head around everything that was going on.
But we're talking early 1980s.
Well, it started in the late 70s, but it sort of culminated in about 1982. So we're talking about events that happened over 40 years ago. They were really quite complicated at the time. There was a lot of stuff which was unclear at the time. It's only become less clear since. So we're going to talk about it in reasonably broad brush terms. But FISA and FOCA, so what were they? So FISA was the Fédération Internationale du Sport Automotif.
Well done.
What do you think of the accent?
Reasonable.
There or thereabouts. and it was an autonomous subsidiary of the FIA.
Right.
Okay, so let's say that it was the representative of the ruling body in Formula One for the sake of clarity and simplicity. FOCA was the Formula One Constructors Association, okay, which sounds simple but actually wasn't. Because it didn't include the manufacturers. So there were three big manufacturers in Formula One at the time. There was Ferrari, there was Renault, and there were Alfa Romeo. And the punch-up basically came about because FOCA, the Formula One constructors, so they were the British constructors, the Williamses and the Tyrrells and the McLarens and the Lotus and that lot, didn't think that they were being treated fairly by FISA. They thought that FISA was favouring the manufacturer groups, Renault, Ferrari, and Alfa Romeo. It also transpired that at the time, it was the manufacturer groups like Renault and Ferrari that were best able to take advantage of the new turbo regulations. Renault's first turbo car came in 1976. So by the end of the 70s, certainly by the early 80s, turbos, which had been very unreliable and frankly more effort than they were worth, were clearly the thing to have. And the Foco team didn't have them. And the FIS and the manufacturer teams did. And they felt that there was an unfair advantage there. And they also felt that the distribution of money from races was being unfairly favoured towards the manufacturer teams. It started, when was it, the 1980 Spanish Grand Prix. Foco drivers were threatened with having their licences suspended because they hadn't turned up at a couple of driver briefings. And what happened then, King Juan Carlos said that the Grand Prix is going ahead. FISA said, well, not with those guys in it.
Mm.
And the Grand Prix went ahead, but it went ahead therefore as a non-championship race because it wasn't sanctioned by FISA. There was then going to be a splinter group, a rival championship called the World Professional Drivers Championship. They actually had a race in South Africa. Yeah.
Wow.
Which was just for the Foco teams.
Mm.
Nobody turned up.
Mm.
So they had the race. Carlos Reutemann won it in a Williams, but there were no public, so that wasn't going to float. Then, do you know about the water-cooled brakes?
Yes, it's brilliant, isn't
it? The water-cooled brakes. I mean, it's just a bit of brilliant lateral thinking. And Ferrari's reply to it.
Go on.
Oh, I'll tell you about that in a minute. So water-cooled brakes were the Foco teams desperately needed a way of combating the power advantage of the turbos. And they could, their cars could very easily get under the minimum weight limit. But obviously they would have been illegal. But the minimum weight was stipulated as being the weight of the car with all its coolant, on board.
Yes.
So what they didn't say was what that coolant was meant to be for, because it was presumed to be meant to be cooling down the engine. Well, they went, well, coolant is coolant. So what we'll do is we will fit water-cooled brakes.
Yeah.
We're going to have these massive water tanks on the car and fill them up. And so the car's weight is legal. We'll then drop the water very quickly, allegedly cooling the brakes, because that's coolant. The car will be then massively underweight for the duration of the Grand Prix. And then at the end of it, because we're allowed to do this, we'll top up the coolant.
Mm. Mm. It's just very clever.
It's just very clever. And then Ferrari said, well, if you're going to do that, there were strict rules, as there are today, about the size of your rear wing. Couldn't be more than a certain, length, width and height. Nobody said how many rear wings you'd have to have. So Ferrari turned up at the US Grand Prix race with a car with two rear wings.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. It's loophole work at its best, isn't it?
Anyway, so, and then Tyrrell did a thing where in qualifying they ran a car underweight, but then replaced the rear wing, which Eddie Cheever, the driver at the time, said it took four men to lift.
It's made of lead,
to get the thing again, to get back up again. So that it all just, it came to a head at San Marino in 1982, when all the Foco teams said, we're not racing. A few of them, I think four of them, in fact, I've written them down, Tyrrell, Acela, ATS and Tolman did. But that still only meant with the... So they each had two cars, so that's eight cars. With the six cars from Alfa Romeo, Renault and Ferrari, that was a grid of 14 cars. And you'd think, by today's standards, oh, well, that's a slightly depleted grid, but it's still 70% of the grid.
Mm.
Back in those days, these were back in the days when, in any given weekend, 32 cars would try to qualify. So it was a massively depleted grid. Basically it brought things to a head, and then it was only resolved by the first of the Concord agreements.
Mm.
And who was the victor? I think that on balance you'd say that Foco won, got more of their wishes, and it was certainly more equitable thereafter. So I think that ultimately they were the winner, but it went on for years and years and years. And in the middle of it, slightly unrelated, because actually this involved all the manufacturer teams as well, was the driver's strike.
Yes.
We're delighted to be working with Pistonheads, the UK's number one performance and premium used car marketplace, now with a new online auction platform to complement the already bustling classifieds. More and more people are choosing to buy and sell their cars by online auction. Pistonheads' comprehensive auction listings are curated by professionals with in-depth descriptions and stacks of photographs. Bidders can ask sellers questions online and arrange viewings before bidding with confidence, thanks to the transparent listings. If you're looking to buy or you're just browsing, visit pistonheads.com/buy/auctions or click the link in the description to see what's live on the platform right now and what's sold recently. For sellers, you'll be reaching the largest audience of performance car buyers in the UK with Pistonheads. It's safe and hassle-free, and with a realistic reserve, you can be confident your car will have a new owner by a fixed date. No more dealing with scammers or tyre kickers. If you're thinking of selling your car on Pistonheads auction platform, visit pistonheads.com/sell/auctions or click the link in the description, and remember to tell them the intercooler sent you.
What were the drivers upset about?
So this came to a head at the 1982 South African Grand Prix held at Kyalami. And this was a new rule which said the drivers can only drive for the teams that they're driving for. It doesn't sound that unreasonable. But actually the ramifications of that were absolutely enormous, because that meant the teams had total control over their drivers.
Oh.
If you think, but I guess the greatest parallel I can think of is the old studio system in Hollywood, where studios would retain actors and say, have complete control over them. So they would say, you know, well, you're next going to be starring in this film or that film. And whether that film was a film that you regarded as having any merit or whether it was a subject matter that was of interest to you, and you couldn't do anything else. And you were owned by the studio. And the drivers suddenly realised that if this was allowed to go ahead, they would become owned by the manufacturers. And they would become puppets. And so all of them, bar one, a bloke called Teo Fabi, who was basically ostracised from the Formula One community thereafter, staged a strike. They refused to race. And they realised that... So they basically holed up in the hotel at Kyalami. And someone, I think it was might have been Niki Lauda, who was coming back into Formula One, realised that if they were all allowed to get back to their rooms, you know, individuals could be visited and maybe persuaded. But if they were all in one central place, that would be impossible to do. So a load of, this is absolutely true, there are a load of mattresses were brought in, there are photographs of this, and all the Formula One drivers basically in sleeping bags on mattresses were camped out in this room. Sharing sort of double mattresses. I think Gilles Villeneuve and Alain Prost were on one together. I mean, it's and Elio De Angelis was playing, that he was a concert stand-up pianist, so he was keeping them entertained, and Villeneuve was doing sort of Scott Joplin rags and that sort of thing. And it was a show of total solidarity. The entire driving community just got together and said no.
And there's power there, isn't there? Well, there's an enormous amount of power.
When you've got a Grand Prix to run.
Yeah.
And there was so much power, because it is, even if one person, okay, one person, as Teo Fabi character, did back down and run away. But it would have been really difficult for any of the big names to get up and go, oh, actually, no, I think I'm going to go and race, and I'm going to allow myself to be tied to my team and go ahead. And the, because the authorities couldn't divide and rule, because they literally locked the door of the room. And if you wanted, there wasn't a loo in the room. So if you wanted to go in, I think a key was put on a table in the middle of the room. And, you know, if you wanted to go out for a pee in the middle of the night, you had to get up and get the key and unlock the door, lock it behind you, go for a pee and come back again. And on pain of death, put the key back on the table. It got to that kind of level. And yeah, and again, common sense ran out. They all, you know, they conceded, and the rule never came into effect, and the race went ahead. I think they got fined a bit, but that was kind of like token sort of stuff. And, you know, common sense won out, but ridiculous.
But it's kind of naive, isn't it, to think that you can bully the, frankly, the most important group of people in the sport, the group of people that the fans care about the most.
Yeah.
They're always going to have the power, the drivers.
Yeah. And you can't very easily replace them.
No. No, you can bring in 20 or whatever other drivers, but they're not the best in the world.
No.
They're not the world champions.
Yeah.
They're not the superstars.
No, and also, you know, the precedent for having breakaway championships, and we're about to, I think, go on talk about another.
Yeah.
You know, in America, you know, IndyCar and CART, it happened and it was successful. So you can't just presume, oh, no, it'll just go away. You know, their attempts are going to fail. So you have to take them seriously.
Mm.
And yeah.
So we've had FISA FOCA.
Yeah.
Should we have FIA FOTA?
FIA FOTA.
FIA FOTA, yes. This is...
This is doing my head in.
Yeah, I know. This is more recent. Yeah. This is 2009, isn't it? And this definitely is part of the Braun documentary. Did you ever watch that with Keanu Reeves?
No, I haven't seen it yet, no.
Because
it's on... What's it on? It's on something I haven't got.
I can't remember.
It's on always, Disney Plus or something.
Something like that. Yeah. It's always so confusing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a big part of it.
Okay.
And actually, it was only when I watched the documentary back that I remembered that this was all quite serious in 2009.
It got very serious.
Of course, we think of 2009, you think of the amazing Braun story, Jenson Button.
Yeah.
But actually, all this was going on as well. And it got quite serious.
Yeah.
So FIA, we know what the FIA is. FOTA, that must be Formula One Teams Association.
Very good. Yeah. Very good.
This is a huge clash between those two organisations.
Yeah, and this is, you know, Max Mosley, you know, sort of hunter turned gamekeeper. So, you know, he was back in the FISA FOCA days. He was a FOCA man completely.
Yeah.
Because he was... Well, he'd started March, yeah, but by this stage he was basically helping Bernie at Brabham.
Right.
But now he, of course, is president of the FIA.
Mm.
And after the great global downturn of 2007 and 2008, and I think that this was a case of trying to do the right thing and completely the wrong way. He said, well, you know, we need to show that we're not just completely profligate with money. And he suggested a budget cap.
Mm.
But what he suggested was it was optional. Okay. And I think the budget cap was something like 30 million euros.
Wow.
Okay. But he said, you don't have to pay it. But if you don't pay it, there are engineering and design regulations, advantages, which you will not be able to take advantage of.
Mm.
So we'll penalise the performance of your car unless you subscribe to the budget cap. And yeah, so the teams that did would have better technology, they have greater design freedom. And some of the teams, a large number of the teams, I've written them down here, Ferrari, BMW, Sauber, Toyota, Renault, Braun, Red Bull and Toro Rosso. So some big hitters just said, you can't do this. You can't have a two-stream solution where you've got on one grid two sets of cars racing to completely different sets of regulations. It's a nonsense. It's a farce. It's not going to work. And they said, if you go ahead with this, we're off.
Mm.
And then, yeah, they threatened to have another thing called the Grand Prix World Championship.
Which is a better name than the professional drivers, whatever it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, again, who knows whether they were bluffing.
But they had a press conference, didn't they? Yeah. There's still footage of that.
Yeah.
With De Montezemolo was there.
Yeah.
And this was just, I think it was just before the British Grand Prix. So either it was a heck of a bluff, or they, I think they...
But if you're going to bluff.
Do it well. And actually come up with deals with circuit owners.
Yeah.
And make the bluff convincing.
Yeah.
They certainly did that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, well, they clearly came out on top. But was there a compromise? Was there a sort of agreement?
There always is a fudge, isn't there? And
yeah.
So much of it goes on backstage and that sort of thing. But the budget cap didn't come in.
No.
And so, yes, again, the manufacturers won.
Mm.
So if MBS, on the unlikely event, MBS is listening to this, it's a cautionary tale, isn't it?
Because
generally speaking, when you look back at it, and clearly there is, you know, it's never 100% victory one side and total defeat for the other. But I would say in all these examples that we have pointed at, the power lies with the manufacturers and with the drivers and not with the rulemakers, because they can go and do something else. And the rulemakers can't. So they always have the option of buggering off and doing something else.
Talking of which, that has been floated a few times over the 74-year history of the Formula One World Championship.
Yes.
What would that look like? Would you be gutted if it happened? I suppose, of course, it depends on the detail, doesn't it? But would it be a pity?
You see, I think it's, and this is where, if there ever was a proper sort of FISA focus style war again, I think the teams would be in a far more difficult position these days. Because if you think about the size of the sport now, just how big a global phenomenon it is, any rival series would have to try to match that.
Yeah.
And if you think of the deals that have been done, the long-term contracts which stand with all the circuits, where are you going to race? The associations in the UK, it's the Motorsports Association. Motorsports UK. Yes, to me, it's still the RAC Motorsports Association. But then again, I am very, very old. They're all going to be with the FIA, and it's almost, to me, it's almost impossible to see a rival series now in a way that maybe it could have been done, 15 years ago? But in the Drive to Survive era, where, you know, and the commercial side of things has just exploded, I just don't even know where you'd start. And if you haven't got the glitz and the glamour, you might say, oh, yes, we're going to go to much more interesting, exciting circuits, and the racing will be amazing. You come up with a set of regs which, you know, make the racing. But ultimately, if you haven't got, you know, the big names there and the glamour and the glitz, and, you know, and the telly and everything else, which is all, you know, will be contracted, you know, way into the future, I think it's really, really difficult. And maybe that's what MBS is banking on, I don't know.
Maybe. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because if, let's say it did happen, who knows how, but let's say it did happen, and the top teams, which we can, let's say it's Ferrari, Red Bull, Mercedes, McLaren, Aston, don't know, whichever, say the top five teams, whichever teams they are, they left, they took their drivers with them. Five new teams came into Formula One. A bunch of other racing teams joined the breakaway series. Which one would have your attention? Is it, what makes Formula One is what I'm asking here. Is it the history? Is it the name Formula One? Or is it the fact that we know we're watching the best drivers and the best teams go head to head? What's at the heart of it?
I think if you took the Beatles in a parallel universe and John, Paul, George and Ringo left and replaced by four other people, it'd still be the Beatles. But it's, but not the Beatles. And I think that if you took, well, for me, Ferrari, Williams and McLaren, which to me are the sort of the heart of Formula One, because they're the teams that are there to race. That's how they started. They started as race teams. Ferrari, Williams and McLaren started as race teams. They didn't try and sell road cars or fizzy drinks or anything else. I think if you took them away from Formula One, and maybe other people are less romantic about it than I am, but I think you would tear the heart out of the sport. And if you got, you know, Mercedes and Red Bull to go with you, as long as what you put in its place was credible, I think people would go there too. I don't think that Formula One could ever be, I think Formula One is probably bigger than any individual team. I think I've always said this, that I think that Formula One is bigger than Ferrari. But if you got enough of them, they would be bigger than Formula One, and that's where people would ultimately follow. But that's very much in theory. I think in reality, I just don't see how it can happen.
I totally agree. And if that were to happen, and the top teams and drivers did leave, whoever was Formula One World Championship the next year, you'd always look at whoever won the World Championship next year. You'd look at it years down the line and just think, yeah, but you were F1 champion on paper, but not really, because the best in the world had gone elsewhere. So it says to me that the thing about Formula One, it's not actually the glitz, the glamour, the history, even the circuits, although it's a big part of it. It is knowing that we're watching the best in the world. And as long as that is the case, I think Formula One will always be the biggest draw. Certainly for me. But it's going to happen again, isn't it? There's going to be another falling out, maybe not threats of a splinter breakaway series, but there'll be something else. The rights holder will fall out with the teams,
yeah.
or the FIA will fall out with someone. It's just going to keep happening, and there'll be more scandals, because there always are. And we haven't really touched on some of those. We could do, couldn't we? Crashgate. A huge scandal.
Spygate.
Spygate. Yeah. Crashgate. I mean, that was proper match fixing, that one, isn't it?
That was terrible.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So, again, for anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about.
And actually, this is coming back round now, isn't it? Because Felipe Massa, who feels that as a result of Crashgate,
absolutely,
he missed out on a world championship to Lewis.
And he is suing for big money, isn't he?
Yeah.
And the people I've spoken to think he has, what's the phrase, a very limited chance of success.
Mm.
But if he does, I mean, it could be enormous, couldn't it?
Mm. It could be.
So what are we actually talking about? We're talking about the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nelson Piquet Jr.
Nelson Piquet Jr., I think on lap 14, so very early in the race, I bet it was a bigger accident than he ever thought he was going to have.
It was a big smash, wasn't it?
Big smash. He goes off. Fortuitously, his teammate, one F. Alonso Esquire, who always seems to turn up in these things, doesn't he? You know, he's got a role to play in Spygate as well. You know, so Fernando is an absolutely front-running driver in a very quick car, but he's had problems in qualifying. He's only qualified down in 14th or 15th. But he's already made his pit stop. Nelson Piquet Jr. sticks it in the wall. Now, normally everybody else would dive into the pits, but back then you got penalties if you pitted under a safety car. And so the choice was you either pitted under a safety car, got the penalty, or did it later, at which stage Fernando would have track position. Anyway, long and short of it is Fernando goes and wins the race from P15 on the grid, or 14, or wherever it was. The following year, after the Hungarian Grand Prix, because he's not very quick, Nelson Piquet gets binned and isn't very happy about this.
Oh.
And so he perks up and goes, actually, remember that race back in Singapore where I had that rather large accident? Well, I was told to have it.
Mm.
I was told to bin the car. And the amazing thing is Renault never tried to deny it. And Renault, the team was being run by one F. Briatore.
Yes.
And he got banned from Formula One for life, since overturned. Pat Simmons got, what did he get? He got 5 years, didn't he? He was, wasn't allowed to go, but that was overturned too. But Flav hasn't been back. Well, I think he's an ambassador for somebody now, but he hasn't run a Formula One team or anything like that. But yes, it was absolute. Well, we can say it because Renault never denied it and people were punished. It was match fixing.
Mm. Mm. Which has no place in any sport. It happens, but it has no place in any sport.
But hang on. Now, you're going to need to tell me about this because you've watched it probably more closely than I have. What was that NASCAR race where someone deliberately binned it and went round the outside of the wall to win the race or come second or whatever, or get past the people he was?
What's his name?
Doesn't really matter. But in NASCAR, someone realised they had to gain a few points and they're coming a few places and they were coming up to literally the last corner, which was this steep bank corner with a bloody great wall on the outside. And he realised that he just kept his hoof in.
Mm.
He could use the wall quite literally as a retaining wall and not lift. And slingshot around the outside of it, like a sort of catapult.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I mean, they changed the rules the next year. But at the time, in NASCAR, there was nothing to stop him doing it. Okay, he hadn't been told to do it. I think he just decided to do it all by himself. So no one could say that anyone was trying to, you know, fix the game. But yeah, I mean, it just shows the level of commitment. He decided to have quite a large accident.
And it worked. What's his? It's going to come to me. I think they call him the Watermelon Man because he's from a family of watermelon farmers.
Yeah.
Ross Chastain. There we go.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, a real Hail Mary round the outside.
Yes.
Amazing thing to witness. But to Crashgate, you mentioned F. Alonso.
Yeah.
And we spoke about him a couple of weeks ago, actually. He's added, not always for the right reasons, an awful lot of colour and texture and intrigue to Formula One in his 20-something years in the sport, hasn't he? We're going to miss him. At the very least, we're going to miss him when he hangs up his gloves, aren't we?
It won't be as entertaining. Are we going to do Spygate now?
Yes, another Alonso tale, isn't it? This one gets complicated.
Oh, I don't think it is complicated.
Okay.
I'm less worried about this one and messing it up. Well, fundamentally, this was a bloke called Nigel Stepney, who is no longer with us, who was very, very senior at Ferrari, but was cheesed off and decided that he would share the secrets, some of Ferrari's Formula One secrets, with a chap from McLaren called Mike Coughlan. He sent the secrets across somehow. It only became apparent, and this is so utterly bizarre and astonishing, I still can't believe it is true, but I've never heard it contradicted, because...
It's so amateur, isn't it?
Mike Coughlan's wife decided to go and photocopy this data in a photocopying shop in Woking, where McLaren is based. And the person who ran the photocopier shop was a Ferrari fan and saw somebody from McLaren, or somebody, the wife of somebody from McLaren, photocopying all this stuff with Ferrari written all over it, and thought, hang on, what's going on here? And it was just absolutely astonishing. And, you know, there were all sorts of denials, weren't there? And nobody denied that Coughlan had it, but McLaren denied that there was... And I think it was shown, actually, that there was nothing from Ferrari on the car, that they hadn't actually used the information. Whether that just meant they hadn't had the opportunity to or not, I don't know. But they suggested that he was the only one and nobody else knew anything about it. Well, it all got very legal and, you know, in the end... McLaren was fined $100 million. I think it's the largest sporting fine that has ever been levied against a team in any sport worldwide. There's the quote. It's been reported. I think it was written in a book. I've never heard it.
It's in the documentary, the Braun documentary.
Yeah. So this is Mosley saying that the fine was. It was 5 million for the about Ron Dennis, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that the fine was £5 million, $5 million for the espionage, and £95 million for being a, I think twat is the word which is most commonly reported. Though I've heard others used, which I wouldn't be saying on a podcast. and McLaren were excluded from the 2007 Constructors' Championship. Literally, the drivers were allowed to keep their points. One of whom really should have been world champion, but for the fact that they were fighting with each other and Kimi nipped through the middle. And McLaren then won the championship with Lewis the following year. I don't think they've won anything since, have they?
No, they haven't.
No.
Gosh, it's been a while, hasn't it? Gosh, it really has been a while.
Yeah.
So lastly, on your list here, you've got 1960 Italian Grand Prix. Now, I have no clue what that refers to.
Oh, okay. So this has got nothing to do with organisers. This is just a bit of Ferrari brilliance. Yeah. So by 1960, because Ferrari was so tied to the past, they still thought that the cart shouldn't pull the horse, and so their engine was still in the front of their cars.
Yes.
But, you know, despite the fact that, you know, by this stage, you know, all the British garagistas, the Coopers and the Lotuses of this world, had mid-engine cars, which were frankly far faster than the Ferraris. The only thing Ferraris had were power. And so what Ferrari decided to do or persuade the organisers to do of the Italian Grand Prix was, despite the fact that it hadn't been used since the mid-1950s, that the 1960 Italian Grand Prix, they'd used the full banking, including the complete banked circuit, which had long since been abandoned as being altogether too fast and too dangerous and, you know, and too prejudicial to the flimsy, frail Formula One machines at the time. At which stage, all the British teams just went, no way, mate. And so they didn't race. And so Ferrari won the Italian Grand Prix.
Yes.
Because all the competition boycotted it, didn't turn up. So there you go.
So actually, there have been instances where these quarrels, or is that the only one? I mean, you did mention the... there was a race during the Fisa Foca era. Oh, the San Marino Grand Prix in 82.
Yeah.
Did that ever go ahead, or was that properly boycotted?
No, that went ahead.
It
with,
did.
With 14 drivers with rather, 14, rather, yes. rather okay. than 32. It should have been.
So there have been a couple of scenarios where these conflicts between the different stakeholders in F1 have...
2005 US Grand Prix.
Yes, US Grand Prix. Yeah.
You know, that was...
Indianapolis.
That was Michelin turned up with a tire which wasn't suited, and they'd had... Ralf Schumacher had a big accident. And Michelin said, unless you modify the track and take, I can't remember which turn it was out of it, or put a chicane in before, we can't guarantee the integrity of our tyres. Therefore, any team fitted with our tyres can't race. And so they went to Bridgestone, who'd done lots of testing there, and whose tyres were absolutely fine, and said, would you mind if you just put a chicane in? And you can imagine what the reaction to that was. So hang on. So the rivals completely cock up, so therefore we have to be compromised. So they just went, no. And, you know, there were all the usual sort of handbags came out. And in the end, I think they did the formation lap.
Yeah, they did.
And then they all peeled off.
Yeah.
And it was Ferrari, Minardi, and was it Lotus? I can't remember.
Yeah, so six cars on the grid.
I mean, it was pathetic.
Yeah.
It was, and what is so demeaning about all of this is the only people who should matter were the only people whose thoughts were completely and utterly ignored.
Well, this is what I was going to say. So there have been, we can think of three occasions when these conflicts have boiled over, affected the competition, the actual racing. A number of cars haven't started, and it's the fans who lose out.
Of course, always.
And that's the inexcusable
thing. It's the people who make it possible in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't care.
Oh, it's pathetic, isn't it? It really is. It's happened a lot.
Yeah.
It's going to keep happening. And it's all pretty inexcusable, but that's just the nature of Formula One, it seems.
It's competition, it's egos, it's money.
Money.
It's a pretty unenviable combination of factors, and there's always going to be conflict as a result.
Indeed. Okay, we'll leave that one there. If you're watching on YouTube, please remember to subscribe to this channel. This is our new podcast channel where full-length podcast episodes live.
And you get to see us.
And you get to see us, you lucky things. And if you are just listening and you don't get to see us through a podcast app, please remember to hit the follow button or the subscribe button. It means you don't miss an episode, but it helps us an awful lot as well. So please do that and make sure you come back next week.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.